What do you get when the grandson of an oil fortune spends millions of his own money and literally the last half of his entire life to make a film about childhood nightmares? Oh, and he does a bunch of meth, too. We'll find out the end result on today's episode of the Indie Film Review.
Scared me for a second. I'm like, did we watch the same movie? That bit about the oil,
the thing at the the beginning.
Oh shit, Jared. What is this? What are we doing?
What is this? Hi everybody, and welcome to the show. That's Dan. I'm Jared. Whoa, I got confused as who I was for a second. That was weird.
I think I'm Jared.
Like, question: am I Dan? My two Dans?
You just pull your face apart, it's me.
Welcome to the nightmare hellscape that is the Indie Film Review. If you, for some reason, if this is your first episode and you're not understanding it by the title, let me help you, because I'm here to help. We independently review films. We review independent film. Because we like it, and we think, well, at least for me, I want to, like, showcase movies that don't get either enough love, or maybe films I haven't ever heard of or thought about ever.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And there's so many films out there, and I want to explore them.
There are so many films.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, like hundreds, you know? At least.
Like, I'd even go say a thousand. There's got to be at least 1,000 movies.
Today's movie we're going to review is The Evil Within.
Jared?
This movie.
Jared,
do you know when this film came out?
Before you say anything, fucking last year.
Last fucking year.
Before you say anything.
Okay.
I had the... How do I put this in, like, politically correct terms? The biggest raging hard-on from Wednesday till now. And I'm like, I need to talk to him about this. I need to talk to him about this. But I saved it. I did not spoil anything for you. I did not say, this film is fucking fantastic. I did not do anything. Just to give you a blind read of this movie. But
yes,
holy fuck. If you don't already know that I love this movie... This is easily made its way in my top 10 horror movies of all time.
So me and Dan, we do not discuss the film normally with each other until we record live in front of a studio audience. I 100% agree with you that this might be one of my favorite horror movies of all time. At least top five.
Unbelievable what just happened to us. Unbelievable. If you, before we even get into the spoiler-free section, go watch this fucking movie.
Yes. So the first section, we're not going to spoil anything, just kind of give you a feel for what the movie's about. Second section is we're going to spoil the hell out of it. I implore you to watch this film. If you are a fan of horror in any respect, or even if you like
mystery movies.
Yeah.
Good, bad movies? Do you think this was bad?
No. I'll explain more later. Watch this film. Just watch this film. Well, here's my reasoning, because... A lot of people online are they didn't treat this movie very kindly.
What?
If you look at reviews and other things, people were pretty down on it. I mean, there's some people who liked it.
This movie blew my mind from the first 30 seconds onward.
Yeah. So, hold on, let me try to read the reception here on the Wikipedia. Riddled with strange and unfocused plot lines... Filled with cringeworthy character acting
now
that becomes so wrapped up in its own eccentricities that it is all impossible to follow coherently.
I will say I can see where that's coming from. Like, there are some plot lines that, you know, were a little unforgiving, but the entirety, like, holistically, this film is a masterpiece.
Yes, I agree. This film is a masterpiece. I could... go through and argue actually a lot of these. So the unfocused plot holes, I can't really argue with that. There are some things that are, well, okay, if you think of the dreamlike nature of this movie,
which is what you're supposed to, oh my god,
everything is unreliable. You're not sure what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing it through the eyes of the main character, who is, he's mentally disabled and also psychologically messed up in his head. Like he is haunted by a literal demon in his brain.
Yes.
And so a lot of these things, like not able to follow what's coherently happening, I mean, that fits in with the dreamlike state of, they even say at the beginning, like, you don't know what to dream and what's not.
Yeah.
And that leads to some of the scariest shit in the movie. Like, this movie was legit terrifying to me.
Even, like, how did you like the special effects in this?
They were the best.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Dan, give us a 30-second elevator pitch, then I'm going to go into more about what the backstory of this film.
Okay. A mentally disabled 30-year-old living with his brother must deal with family issues and absolutely terrifying nightmares.
So, Andrew Getty, the guy who made this film.
Right.
This is the only film he ever made.
Yes.
He worked on this film with his own money. He was the grandson and heir to an oil fortune, the Getty fortune. He was given millions and millions of dollars. So he's lived a life of luxury his entire life. And when his grandfather was going to die, he was going to get billions. Like, he would have been a billionaire.
Right.
I think he was in his late 30s or 40s. I'm not sure when he passed away. But he was also heavily addicted to drugs. As one might be if, I don't know, let's say you don't have to do anything in your life ever. And you party all the time.
And you need some kind of stimulus.
Yeah, he's just living a carefree life his entire life. So he's like, I don't know, I'll just get addicted to meth, I guess. And that's what he did. And while he was doing all of those things and living a life of excess, he's like, I want to make a film about my childhood nightmares as a kid, where he would have dreams so vivid that he didn't think that they were from him. He thought something else was putting those dreams in his head. And he was so terrified of them. He's like, I need to personify this.
There's
in a film.
A fucking amazing exchange of dialogue that explains that in this movie.
Yes. And he put his heart and soul into this movie. Like, it took him so long. Like I said, like over 15 years. He literally died before the film was completed. In his own house. The house that they filmed the movie in. That was his house.
Wow.
And he died in a very mysterious way, too. If you actually YouTube him, they talk about how they're not really sure exactly how he died. I think you can probably find out if you do some research. But I'm going to assume it was drug related. I think he fell down some stairs or something. I don't know.
Right.
But holy shit. It's kind of nuts. It adds a whole new layer to this film.
It really does. I did not know all this.
It's fucking crazy. And then, some of the performances too, like they were talking about the uneven acting. I would say there was a couple actors in this. They weren't even the main actors. There were some actors that weren't good. Most of them were great. How did you feel about the writing?
Well, the writing in this. Okay, so there are plot holes, but like I said, they're forgivable because of the dialogue exchanges and just the construction, like the written construction of the fucking nightmares and how he made them work.
Yeah.
Because each of the nightmares was absolutely terrifying. Absolutely.
Yes. Oh yeah, fucking terrifying. I love the spider motif that he gets into. That's really cool. And it's I can't spoil it. So
let's just get into
the writing. Is natural.
Yes.
That's what I like about it the most. Because when you watch a film, a lot of it is very Hollywood writing of, like, let's make it homogenized and have it convey exactly what I need to in this scene to get the scene to move. This movie is like, fuck you. We're not going to do that. We're going to have it just like two people were just having a regular conversation. And they do that in such a good way. Like, if they had not actors reading these lines, it would be terrible. But they actually have some pretty decent actors in this movie, especially the main actor.
Holy shit. Did you know the Sklar brothers are in this movie?
What's that? Yes.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that until maybe a few minutes ago. They were the police officers.
Yeah. So
what makes me wonder is, like, did they switch out?
I don't know.
Because they weren't ever both on screen.
Maybe. But I will say, Sean Patrick Flannery is the brother.
Yes.
And Frederick Kohler is the mentally disabled 30-year-old.
Yeah.
And both of them do just a fantastic job. And as I am... oh, and what's his name? I think it's Michael Berryman. The guy who's like been in... He just looks fucking weird. This is the best way to say it. He was in the original Hills Have Eyes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. So they have Matthew McGorry. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, the villain guy. What was his name?
Michael Berryman.
Michael Berryman. So both of them, apparently, I don't know if this was their last film for each of them, because apparently they were in failing health at this time.
Wow.
So this might have been one of the last films they ever did.
Matthew McGorry died in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Damn. And so Sean Patrick Flannery and Tina Mayer as Lydia, I think they both did really good jobs.
Yeah.
But it gave me a bizarre, like, soap opera vibe. I don't know. It was like seeing them. They're like, it felt so 80s. Like her hair was like
Michael Berryman's still alive. I don't know.
And it was, okay. And there was something about it where it was just like, whenever they were both on screen together, I felt like I was somewhere else. Like I was back in time. And then you look at this movie, it was made in 2017.
Well, but it was originally constructed in 2002.
Yeah.
What I'm saying. And then like,
but it feels like a 90s movie.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God.
It feels even older.
Yeah.
So, but I like that aesthetic. I love the feel of this movie.
Me too.
It's great. It fits perfectly.
Now, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Nothing against Sean Patrick Flannery, but do you not think that Sean Patrick Flannery is a poor man's Guy Pearce?
I feel like I've seen him in a lot of other movies.
Yeah, he was the other brother in Boondock Saints.
Oh, okay.
He was.
I think he did a great job.
He was the titular Powder.
Was he?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's how much fucking makeup he had on. Can we start spoiling this motherfucker?
Yes. So guys,
I've taken so many notes on this film.
I implore you, go watch this movie. If you're any fan of horror or of life in general, a lover of the arts, of anything, go watch this movie. Come on. Get your shit together. It's on Amazon. Go watch it. Get Amazon Prime. What are you doing? I think you'd even watch it for free on YouTube if you look.
If I can find a DVD copy of this, I'm fucking buying it, man.
I will buy this Blu-ray. I will buy it. So, Andrew Getty directed this movie, and some of the shots are so awesome. Like when
there is not a single mirror shot that feels cliche.
Oh my God, they're all fucking fantastic,
and it's all over the film. Is the
so
mirror
good.
Is it like it? More so than the spider, the mirror is the biggest motif in the film.
Yes, this mirrors dualism. And spiders for sure. So Dennis is the mentally challenged boy who is being terrorized by these evil, terrible dreams. And there's a scene where Dennis and John, his brother, are going up the stairs, but one's on the higher level, one's on the lower level, and it's a spiral staircase. It's very big. And there's this amazing shot of them just going up the stairs, and Dennis is like, "You think I'm dumb?" or blah, blah, blah. And he's like, "I don't think that, blah." And he, like, they're having this conversation as they're ascending the stairs, and the camera's following them. And it was so fucking cool. I loved it. Did you know that he custom built all of these camera rigs to get all these shots?
That's
why this
amazing.
Movie was so expensive.
This movie was only $6 million, though.
Oh, I think it was more than that.
Really?
It was over 10 at least.
But
yeah, he custom
million.
Built a lot of the shots.
Wow.
So like, do you remember the scene where, so Dennis has a bunch of hamsters in his room.
Uh-huh.
And his brother is trying to slowly get rid of all of his stuff because he like, there's a great conflict where the brother owes a debt to.
Yeah. So basically.
Dennis.
Basically,
yeah,
when they were kids, they were playing around, and I think the brother, Dennis, got punched by his brother, and he fell downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made him like he was paralyzed for a bit, but what really fucked up was his brain, and he turned into this, you know, this mentally disabled person.
They couldn't resuscitate him fast enough, so it killed a lot of his brain cells. So he became mentally disabled. And apparently he was a genius. That was the one thing in the writing where I'm like, you don't need to hammer that home too much. It's like, okay. But that's cool. So he, the brother, John, feels like he owes a debt to his younger brother, Dennis, but he also feels like it's a burden.
Right.
And it's like, he wants to move on and live with Lydia, his girlfriend, and he wants to marry her and have a kid with her, but he feels like he can't abandon his brother because she doesn't want to live with Dennis. She wants him to go live in a home or something because she doesn't know the whole story, I guess. So I like how flawed all these characters are. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all bad people that sometimes do good things, and that's so much more human than how one-note characters can be in like a regular Hollywood movie, you know what I mean? Where it's like, here's my one personality trait. Everyone's very complicated in this movie. You can't just outright say that Dennis is a terrible person, or that John is a terrible person, or that Lydia's bad for wanting them to send Dennis off to a home. Because it's like, it's hard taking care of a mentally disabled person, especially one that's now disturbed and like wants to kill everybody. And they bring a lot of that stuff up, like the difficulties of taking care of somebody like that. And I find all of that so fascinating.
So the very first 5 minutes of this movie open up with this beautiful nightmare, but you don't know it's a nightmare at first. It's just,
it's insane.
Like, it's crazy how insane it is. But it, like, what I like about this is the voiceover works in this regard because it's so poetic about being terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this opening monologue that's voiceover, and he makes sure that you know that it's this little boy talking, and it ends with him saying, well, it ends with the nightmare, and then he's like, well, now this is me, and you'll have to get used to my voice, my outside voice, because it sounds nothing like my inside voice. And then that's how it transitions into him being mentally disabled, and you're like, this is the best shit ever.
Some of the coolest imagery you see is like literally in the very beginning of the film.
Yeah.
It's fucking spectacular. It's hard to even describe unless you see it. And you can tell like how difficult a lot of these shots were, and like all this weird transitioning and editing and stuff they had to do to make all that happen.
But okay, so basically, just to spoil it, because it's so fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
He goes, like, you know, the haunted house rides at carnivals.
Yes.
A mom and a boy go on it, and the boy is Dennis, and the camera follows them through it, and nothing happens. And he says nothing happens.
Yeah.
And then he's like, the kid's like, mom, that really sucked. We should get our money back. We should get our money back. Mom, that really sucked. And then mom takes off her glasses, and her eyeballs are lips. And she's like, what makes you think the ride is over? I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And that sets up perfectly with like, you don't know when the dream has ended.
Yes, never and that is a recurring theme in this movie.
The nightmare is always happening. It's fucking genius.
But then the other thing that like made this film, I there's so much. So another thing on my notes is the dog joke. It's like,
oh yeah, tell it if you remember.
Yeah, it's like, so there was a car driving and it hit my dog in the ass. And the teacher's like, rectum? No, it hit my dog in the ass. He's like, no, rectum. Wrecked him. It fucking killed him.
It was, he goes, thank so you, funny. Thank you. You're too kind.
It was so funny.
He's like telling it to the mirror.
Yeah, he gets this mirror in his room, and he's like, I don't like this mirror. I saw this mirror in a fucking dream.
Yeah.
And then he immediately buddies up with it because it starts talking to him.
Yes, the mirror is, and think of the acting that this guy has to do.
Oh my God, it's
where he
brilliant.
Is pretending to be
two
this
people.
Other person talking to himself. It's done so well. It's fantastic. And then the mirror is kind of like, hey, I'm your friend, you know, you should listen to me. And he's like being nice to him and whatever, while his brother has been like ignoring him and stuff. And there's the reason the mirror is in his room is because John has found a secret doorway, a secret room behind a cabinet, which is like a storage space. And in there is a bunch of really old, expensive furniture. And they're like, well, we want to sell all this. And they're trying to take it out to catalog it. And he's leaving it in his brother's room because he's slowly getting rid of all of his brother's stuff. Because he's going to send him away eventually. But and there's that whole conflict of Dennis, like, he wants to send him away, but to a really nice place, not to a place that's hard, you know, like, or he thinks that it's something to, like, his standards, because he also feels guilt for wanting to send him away.
Right.
So at least he's like, well, I want to live his best life. But so the hamster thing I brought up earlier, they talk about how his hamster stink, and he has these big layouts of all these tubes everywhere. They put a camera through one of the tubes,
mm-hmm.
and it, like, zooms through. It was so cool. They only do this one time. And imagine, they had to get, like, a specialty camera that they make or whatever they did to do that. And it was like, oh, I loved it. And there's so many little shots like that in the film that are just a one-time shot. I love the directing of this movie and the camera shots. The camera work is so good, along with the visuals. It's fantastic. Any like negative qualities that you would think of in this film are outshined by all the really
because
good
it's
stuff.
Like a smorgasbord of just brilliant visuals.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the get-go, like, it just that whole nightmare at the very beginning, then it goes into a second nightmare where the demon in the mirror puts a fucking zipper on this guy's back and climbs inside of him.
Yep. And then makes him draw the faces of all the people he's going to kill.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
This movie is all sorts of fucked up. All sorts of fucked up.
So, Dennis has a crush on the ice cream lady.
Yes.
And he's telling his brother John and Lydia, he's like, hey, I want to go get ice cream. I want to go get ice cream. And they're like, you just want to go there to hit on that girl. He's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. It was really adorable. They go and, like, she's very kind to him, you know, and she just seems like a good person. And later on in the film, the demon convinces him that he has to go and, like, kill her. But he's so conflicted. I love how conflicted he is of listening to the demon, mm-hmm. and trying to do the right thing. And he's like, I don't understand. And the demon's, like, trying to trick him. I love that.
And let it be known, though, that, like, I want to repeat it, that the mirror shots, anytime he's talking to the demon in the mirror, which is, you know, himself most of the time, but anytime he's talking to the demon in the mirror, they take so much care to not make it like a cliche
mm-hmm.
duality thing where, like, one of my favorite ones is where he's laying down on the floor and you see him talk.
Oh, I love it.
And then he pulls it down to the mirror and you see the mirror talk. And it's like, wow, this is so fucking cool.
It's so good. So later, much later on in the movie. Oh, and what was great too is, like, after 30 minutes, because I checked, I'm like, how far am I into this film? I'm like, holy shit, there's still an hour left.
Yeah,
I was so excited.
This movie,
I
was going to say, that's my next note. This movie does not stop. It just fucking hits 60, in 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, and then it just takes you on a fucking wild ride. It's amazing.
It's like a nightmare, but a fun nightmare. I don't know. I loved it. It's Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Wait, so going back to that one girl... One of the things that the demon says to convince him otherwise is she wouldn't fuck you with somebody else's pussy.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. And he's like, well, you're boring and drab or whatever, but if you were a serial killer, then she would really get wet. And I was like, what the fuck? So it seems like the demon's thing is, I want you to kill enough people and then I'm able to come into the real world. But what he doesn't tell Dennis is that he's going to take over his body and send Dennis's soul into the dark world,
mm-hmm.
and he'll be trapped there forever, which is pretty fucking cool. That's if you even believe any of that's happening, because Dennis could just be out of his mind crazy. And the demon might actually be like his normal self.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like himself before he was mentally disabled, trying to get out.
Yeah.
That's his version of himself locked away, which I thought was cool too. So there comes to a point where Dennis has been rejected by the ice cream lady. He actually asks her out on a date, and she says no. And they do this amazing... This movie subverts your expectations so much. It just says a big fuck you to everything you think about in horror. And I love it so... Like, the guy who made this, Getty, he's seen a lot of horror movies, I would assume. And it's like he knows when the jumps are coming. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be as surreal and as crazy as possible to just defy all the laws of physics. And it works because of how dreamlike and crazy the film is. So, okay. We got the ice cream lady. She hears a noise in the back room. She goes, oh, okay. She goes in the back room. The freezer door is open. The window's open. The water is running. She goes, oh, okay. And she investigates each thing. And you're like, oh, she's going to investigate the water. She turns it off. Nothing happens. Oh, she goes up to the window. Oh, I wonder why this window's open. She closes it. Nothing happens. Oh, she goes to the freezer. Oh, opens it. Oh, looks in. Nothing happens. And you're like, oh, God damn it, movie. She closes it. She's sitting there like, oh, I guess everything's fine back here. She does this. She checks this area twice. Yeah. So on her second time she checks it, the movie still tricks you. And you're like, motherfucker. And there's a weird thing of like repetition in this movie where you're like, have we done this before? This feels weird. And I feel like that's kind of part of the dream state too. And then she goes to this high cabinet. A cabinet where you're like, there's no way the killer is in this cabinet. That would make no sense. She opens it. Dennis jumps out of it backwards. And he jumps onto the ceiling.
Yes.
And he's staring and smiling at her with a knife. And it gave me such vibes of... What's the name of that Italian horror movie with the guy with the big scissors? You know what I'm talking? I think it's like Phenomenon.
Yeah, Phenomenon.
Yeah, it gave me like those vibes. It's giving me like... Italian giallo films. Yeah, holy shit. A lot of vibes of that. You know I love Italian horror movies.
Yes.
And then he jumps down and he's smiling with the knife like, eh! And I'm like, this is so good. And she runs away, runs out into the street and gets hit by a car. And then as soon as she gets hit, Dennis it starts crying. He's like so sad. And I'm like, man, this scene... could not get any better. This is was just fantastic.
But then the follow-up to that is she, like, he goes back to, like, there's a recurring thing where he goes to this kind of Chuck E. Cheese-like place to order pizza.
Yeah.
And, maybe it's not a recurring theme. It's just the first time he goes there. It's like, so basically, in order to make up for, like, you know, kind of estranging him, the brother and the girlfriend say, you're
John
in charge
Lydia,
tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so John and Lydia, they say, you're in charge tonight. And he's like, well, get in the car. So he knows exactly where he's going. And they go to this place. And then there's this one point where he goes to the bathroom. He's like, I got to go to the bathroom. And he starts having the dream again. And on the way out, he sees this girl who's supposedly dead. And she takes off her clothes.
The ice cream lady.
Yeah, the ice cream lady. She takes off her clothes in the middle of this restaurant. And he's like, what? And he's like, being fooled by it. And then she makes a quip. I forgot what the quip was about being dead. And she falls like limp, like she was just hit by a car. And she turns into like what I can only describe as a booby back crab.
Booby back crab is very correct.
On
that
point,
is right.
Yeah. And she starts running towards him, Exorcist style. Like, what the fuck?
It was fucking rad. And then the hallway gets all weird, and it's like dreamlike, and he's like backing away.
And then he wakes up. Man. He wakes up at the table.
That happens a lot, where just crazy shit happens, and he wakes up. He's like, was I dreaming? Was I awake? Was I sleeping? It was so cool. And then the animatronics that they make in that, it's like a pirate-themed pizza restaurant. They actually, all of those were constructed for the film.
They look like
Getty made them.
The one that was singing looks kind of like the demon, like Michael Behrman.
Yeah, he does. And the octopus thing in the background, that thing can actually play the drums, apparently.
That's amazing.
It's pretty neat. And what's cool, too, is that there's so many little touches in the movie.
Like
when
John
explains to Dennis
how the octopus works.
Yes.
And then Dennis redoes that for his taxidermy.
Yes. Even though Dennis says, like, I don't understand a word you're saying.
Yeah.
It's either the demon is hearing it or he does. Like, his inner self knows. because he puts on a play at the end, which is fucking great. God damn it. So let's talk about...
This film, is it, can we just take a moment and just breathe? Because this film is so good. Just...
Man. God damn, dude.
It's so
It's hard to put into words how awesome this film is. It's so fucking
good. Oh, man.
And I will debate anyone that says otherwise.
I know, right?
In a public forum. I will defend this movie with my honor. So one thing I want to mention is Lydia and John, there is a moment where they both kind of wake up and then their whole day is very dreamlike, like how Dennis has been experiencing. So Dennis has been going around killing everybody they know. Anyone they're acquainted with, he's been murdering them. So it's like they're going around living their day. They go to a restaurant, whatever, and everything feels weird to them because all the normal people that they would see aren't there. So yeah. They're like, what the fuck is going on? And that was the exact intended thing that Dennis wanted to do to them.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're kind of like, that's so personal. Because Dennis knows what John really did to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that it wasn't an accident. But his mentally handicapped self doesn't. So it's like his inner self. So is it, like I said, is it really the demon? Because why would the demon want to get revenge on these characters? He has no motivation to do that. The demon only wants to kill and to come into the real world. So I think the demon is really, now saying this, is really Dennis's.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like how vague it leaves it, though.
Yes, that's like, really cool.
You don't, because everybody in this film is an unreliable narrator.
So a criticism of this movie, once we get to this scene, the acting gets a little rough. So we have John and Lydia, they see a friend of theirs that hasn't been killed. And we haven't met this guy the entire film, I don't think. He's the bookstore owner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they have this weird back and forth about they're trying to convince each other that the books and that the DVDs that Dennis has been buying aren't his, because he's been buying, like, taxidermy and How to Get Away with Murder, you know, like shit like that. Like, real obvious stuff.
Right.
And John keeps convincing himself, and it's like they do this back and forth. Like, this is probably the weakest part of the movie for me, of... Because it's a little hard to follow, and the librarian is not a good actor. I don't know who this guy is, but he doesn't do a good job. I don't know what was going on with him, but all of his lines didn't work, and he was just taking me out of the film. Like, this whole scene could have been just removed.
Right.
But so it's a lot of back and forth. But that's my criticism of it, is some bad acting there. But that was like the only time where I really felt like, oh, what is this? Like,
well, okay, there was one other time that I'm like, wait, what? he's in front of the mirror and he doesn't want to be in front of the mirror anymore. So he goes and he lays down in bed, but there's a mirror next to his bed.
Yeah.
That's passable to me. But who carries a bottle of spray paint on the nightstand that the mirror's on?
Oh, yeah, that's
because
weird.
It's just right fucking there, and he's just like...
Yeah, he grabs the spray paint and sprays the mirror to block
but
the image.
Spray paint is just right there, conveniently.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, he huffs it at night, I don't know.
I forgot. Boys, people Dan. Do droids?
Droids?
People do droids.
Da 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 Watch Star Wars, The Last Jedi, in theaters now. Maybe Chewbacca will fist somebody. I don't know.
I hope so.
Hairy fist. Hope there's lightsabers. Okay, so we got Lydia, right? She goes on ahead to go tell Dennis the good news that they're all going to be a family now and everything's great. She's finally convinced after hearing John's story of how he accidentally pushed Dennis down the stairs that she'll make an effort to love Dennis and take care of him. It's not the family she wanted, but it's the family she will
have.
Need? That didn't work. Yeah, but have. So she's willing to make sacrifices. She's growing as a character. She shows up at the house and she hears a baby crying. And I'm like, oh shit. Cause it's the one thing that she wants the most is a baby. She goes in, she sees a little baby carriage. She opens it up, sees the baby. And then the baby turns into Dennis. He jumps out of the baby carriage. He goes, magic trick. And he's holding a knife. He's like, now you see the knife. And he waves his hands. He goes, now you don't. And I'm like, that was kind of dumb. And then she turns and runs away. And then you realize the knife is in her chest.
Yes.
And I'm like, that was fucking rad. Holy shit, that was so fucking cool. I loved it. So it went from something that was like, that was lame, to, oh, damn. That was so fucking cool.
And then she wakes up later, strapped to like this old iron bed.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, this was kind of goofy, but it was fun, I guess. It was weird.
Drills holes in the back of her head. And you don't know why he's doing it at first. But you find out later that he's making her
into a reason. You're right.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. Okay. Man, every time this movie, it's like this movie is so deliberate in everything it does.
Surprisingly so. Like
Like
horror is typically like a low genre. Nobody likes it. But this movie is just so well executed. It's ridiculous.
Well, he had 15 years to think about it, Dan. And a lot of math to help him through.
Oh,
he
was so channeling... So much math.
Stephen King. He's like, Stephen King, give me guidance. You know,
Matthew Getty, we're making fun of you, but please rest in peace. Or Matthew, Andrew Getty. Andrew Getty, we're making fun of you, but please rest in peace, because this movie was just wonderful.
This was his life's work. You know what's really sad is I saw on TMZ this little, because I was trying to find any information I could. And on Getty and this movie. And there's a little interview that TMZ does. I mean, TMZ is the worst. But they were interviewing Getty's son. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, have you seen the film? And this guy was so strung out on drugs at the airport. He looked like a raver, you know, and he was just like sweating and he couldn't focus. And he was just like tweaking hard. And he's like, nah, we don't talk about it. We don't recognize that film, and we're not going to talk about it. And I'm just like, oh, what a... This guy's the worst. It just made me sad.
Right.
But I mean, at least Andrew Getty had some ambition and wanted to make something. But this dude, I'm just like, you're going down the same path your dad did. And it's like, I don't know. It made me sad. I was like, What are you doing? You can't even honor your dad's work. I mean, the people who worked on this, they finished it for him. They edited, like, they did all the production and finally finished the movie in his honor, because they spent so much time working on it. And I'm like, how could you not watch the movie that your dad made? They must really fucking hate each other. Yeah. I guess that must be it. Like, they must be very estranged. I don't know. But it kind of added a whole new layer to it of, like, him and his own son. It was fascinating. Also, I'm extrapolating and adding my own things to it, so I don't know really what's going on at all. So don't take my word for it as gospel. So the final scene, right? John shows up. He's now realized that his brother has been killing people. He goes
about
into the
time,
secret room.
If you ask me.
Yeah, and he's following the string that says showtime in 1 minute. He's following the string to the secret room, which is pretty great. And he goes, it's showtime on this little, you know, on the door. He opens the door and there's this little love seat. And he's just like looking all around. He doesn't know where his brother is. He keeps calling for him. He's like exasperated. So he just kind of sits down in it. And then these lights come up. Mm-hmm. And at first he's kind of like excited. He thinks it's like, oh, this is cool. Because he sees Dennis doing a show. And it's like his girlfriend is sitting on his lap. And he's like pretending to be a puppet.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, wow, neat. And he's like not realizing what's going on. This is kind of silly, but I still liked it.
I loved it.
And he starts to tell a story of
two boys
when they were kids.
Yeah.
And he uses the little kids that he had murdered earlier to tell the story.
Yeah.
Of how John was actually jealous of Dennis for being so smart and talented that he intentionally pushed him down the stairs to hurt him. And that was the big secret of, like, he didn't do it on accident. He did it on purpose to hurt him. And it was like, holy shit. And then once he realizes that his girlfriend is dead and is a fucking puppet, and you can see the fingers poking out of her mouth as she's talking,
he realizes that he's glued to the chair.
Yeah, that he's fucking glued to the chair. And all the other characters that he's killed, they all start coming to life. And then the social worker, who we didn't even talk about, turns into a giant spider. And her face doubles, and then the pincers of the spider are hands that come out of the mouth. And I'm like, this is so fucking rad. It's so good. And he's just freaking out so badly. He's so scared that he breaks free and grabs the gun that he had, and he shoots himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of wondering, like, was all of the stuff he was seeing just in his head? Or it's interesting to think about, like, if he could have gotten away, or was he just so racked with guilt that he's like, yeah, you're right, I fucked up your whole life, and I've been trying to make it up to you, and I'm selfish and whatever. And he's just like, I'm gonna or is it the horror of seeing all of that?
Yeah.
He's just so terrified. He's like, I'm gonna fucking blow my brains out, because anywhere's better than here. One of the coolest climaxes of a horror film I've ever
Absolutely. Seen. I agree 100%. Like, there's so many, okay, so, like, compare it to a film like Creep, that climax, it's so, I don't want to call it underwhelming, but, like, it's just so low-key. Yes. This one is over the top without being cheesy to me, you know what I mean?
And I think filmmakers now, especially ones that are backed by, like, a big budget or you know, like, some of the non-indie films going on right now, they're too afraid to make a film like this.
Yeah.
Because it would freak people out too much.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not, what's the word? Homogenized. It's cause you know, like the, like movies to sell tickets, they need to make it as accessible as they can to everyone. That's why they take like the RoboCop remake and make it PG-13. So it's like, so everyone can go see it. Cause more people see it, I get more money, you know? But it's like, oh, if we make a good film, then people will just want to see it. And then you'll make money. You know, it's no one is going to be making this film. And it's like nuts that this even got made.
I think saturated might be the word you're looking for. Like, it's watered down.
Yes. Yeah. Watered down horror. Oh, man. What a ride. We went a little long. Sorry about that. But we had a lot to say about this movie. So
we got Twitter at Indie Film Pod. We got Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod.
Yes. Gmail at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com.
Find us on Facebook.
You can find us on Facebook, at Indie Film Review. Well, we're definitely hosted on Podbean still. Wow, wowie zowie. Indiefilmreview.podbean.com. Find us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Even if you hate us, you should give us a 5-star review and be like, this was terrible. 5 stars. We'd really appreciate it. Keep sending us your independent films or movie suggestions. We're all about that. We love it. So thank you again. Hugs and kisses. Dan, you have the final word.
So I goes to my teacher. I says, hey, my dog got hit in the ass. My teacher says, rectum. And I said, that's not a rectum. That's my wife.
rectum? I hardly even knew it.